Welcome to Great Australian Lives.
For Tobin Brothers Funerals,
celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight was probably in your lounge room this morning, and she'll likely be there tomorrow night too. She's a force to be reckoned with on TV, a trailblazing female who's headed up some of the biggest sports broadcasts this country has seen and hosted some of the most successful shows our commercial networks have put to air. She's worked her way up to the top of the TV game with a beaming smile and a head of hair I personally am quite jealous of. I'd like to welcome Bec Madden to Great Australian Lives. How are you, Bec?
I am so well, and thank you for that lovely introduction. But I do just have to add one little tiny bit there. Everything else was 100% perfect. The hair is good, but sometimes I have a little bit of help. I do have some hair pieces in.
Really?
On occasions. Just a little bit.
I just love the height, the body. It's such – what I aim for with my hair is volume, and you appear to have it in spades. I'm so jealous.
I'll tell you why.
Why?
My mum is a former hairdresser, and she worked in the days that you did beehives. Like she was young, she was, you know, 22 there, and women's hair had to last for a week.
I love me some
back combing. So they used to have a comb up on a Wednesday. So come in on a Saturday for their beehive and then have a comb up on a Wednesday or Thursday. So it had to last a week. So I know all about body. In fact, it's hereditary.
Do you know what? I love me a beehive, and as much as it damages your hair to back comb, I don't care because it looks wonderful. The bigger the hair, the smaller the hips. That's what they always say.
True.
Now, Bec, I want the audience to have a little listen to something. Of course, it is part of Australian Ninja Warrior. This is a clip from last season, but it's a dramatic one. Let's have a listen now.
He's hit his head. He might even be bleeding.
Sam Goodall, I think he's struggling here.
I'm not quite sure what's going on.
Third season, I was a ninja who was too slow.
Sam, he's got four seconds left, three
this
seconds,
would be
2 seconds, 1 second.
Can he do it?
Sadly, he's not going to get there.
Within a
he
second.
He doesn't get there. He just misses out.
What drama. What a great show. It must be so much fun to be a part of Ninja Warrior.
Yes, there are elements that, you know, I think I shouldn't be paid to do this show because I have so much fun. Like, I feel guilty taking some money for this show because I do just have a ball. But in saying that, we it's really interesting, and this shocks everybody, but we often are filming till 4:30 in the morning. So people are like, why? I'm like, this is an outdoor event. It's got to be dark when we start filming. So we turn the cameras on sometimes at, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. We have hundreds of competitors to get through. So that's our filming schedule. So sometimes when we're overexcited like that, I think we're actually delirious.
Because you're very excited throughout the recording. It really gets you going, the show. It's very upbeat.
It's very upbeat. And it's, I suppose, a really different side of my public personality, because my origins have been journalism and being a newsreader, and that's the complete opposite to what I am on Australian Ninja Warrior. But I think, generally speaking, my personality is pretty up and pretty bubbly, and I just ramp it up a notch or two or ten on Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, well, it's all great fun. It must be different recording shows this season. Obviously, we're all in the middle of the pandemic, and you weren't part of a couple of shows early on because of that, were you?
Yeah, so it was to be honest, a really stressful time, because my co-host on Weekend Today, Richard Wilkins, tested positive for coronavirus from Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson when they were visiting Sydney. And then I worked with him. He had caught up with them on the Saturday night, and I worked with Richard on the Sunday morning on Weekend Today in Sydney. So when he got his positive test result, I think it was on a Wednesday from my recollection, it was some months ago now, we were just about to film the first episode of Australian Ninja Warrior. I think it was almost the next night that he was confirmed. And then I had 24 hours of absolute panic. I didn't know what to do. I mean, this was very early on in the COVID-19 as well. Nobody I knew had tested positive. There weren't hundreds of people. Mm. It was all very new. So I went to the Epworth Hospital in Melbourne, and I had to tell a little lie because no one was being tested back then. If you didn't have any symptoms, no one was being tested. That was the mandate. So I lied and went to the Epworth Hospital and said I had a sore throat and a runny nose so I could be tested, because for the show to go on, I needed a negative test result. Yeah. I couldn't go on set if there was a question mark over me. So I begged and I got the test, and thankfully pretty quickly I got the results then I could go back on set. However, I did miss two episodes, and I was really upset about it at the time, because at the time I didn't know what my test result was going to be. I had been in close contact with a positive case. And I'm thinking, the thing that I love, one of the things I love at Channel 9 is working on Australian Ninja Warrior, and there was a moment there that I thought I might miss out this season.
Yeah, that's that would have been tough. It is. Aside from that, though, it's such a good show, and it's one of those rare ones these days where everyone in the family can watch it. It's, you know, it's wholesome, and it appeals to kids because of the acrobatics, to parents because probably of the challenge. And that must be a nice feeling too, that everyone can enjoy this show.
I've got a lot of girlfriends with kids about, you know, 7 and 8 years of age. They all call me Auntie Becky. I'm technically not their auntie, but they're like, Auntie Becky, we can't wait. When's Ninja on? They ask me all the time. And I feel now I've moved into that territory. For a whole generation, I'm going to be what I have memories of a lot of people were for me in my childhood, that ritual and that tradition of sitting down on a Sunday night watching a show like Hey Hey It's Saturday comes to mind, or you know, a couple of those shows that were real traditions for people's family life. Now I feel like I might be one of those people. So growing up, they might be like, oh, I remember when that blonde lady, what was her name? You know, I used to sit down on my grandpa's knee or whatever it may be, or my mum's knee, and we used to watch that, you know, as a family. So I think it's, you know, it's into season four now, so that may well be the case. They'll have childhood memories of me being part of their life, being part of their favourite TV show.
Maybe we'll have to get Pluck a Duck or Aussie Ostrich to get out on the course and do it themselves.
Yeah, that's right, and that would appeal to my generation.
Me too.
That's how I grew up.
Yeah, absolutely. How, you mentioned before that sometimes you're filming at 3 or 4 a.m. You're a mother of a toddler, 2-year-old, little Ruby. Mm. How do you manage, how do you manage to get up in the morning and deal with a little demanding toddler after being up all night?
Oh, I don't know. My work schedule is always up and down, and it's always sort of all or nothing, so to speak. Mm. There's never, people say, how do you balance, you know, being a mom and working all these crazy hours? Well, I don't balance. It's either really going well or it's I'm just getting through. I know, say, for example, you know, Australian Ninja Warrior or, you know, the Australian Open Tennis, you know, it's 3 or 4 weeks that I have to have my head down, and everything else goes out the window. I make sure I plan as much as I possibly can. I do have a nanny sort of once or twice a week. Normally, she usually picks up some extra hours. My husband might take a week off work. Then my mum sort of comes in to help me out. But, you know, I can't be the mother I am normally when I'm filming Australian Ninja Warrior or doing the tennis, because the hours are just ridiculous. I have to, you know, you can have 1, 2, 3 nights sleep where you're sort of getting four hours a night, but you can't do it for 2 or 3 weeks.
Nice.
So I have to just set those things up, whether I go and stay at a friend's house or go and, you know, find somebody who's, you know, away on holidays. I'll go and stay at their house just so I can get a decent night's sleep, because I can't function and perform on television when I've, you know, so had 3 hours sleep. So that's what I do. I just sort of juggle it. Or my husband and Ruby go and stay at, you know, their grandparents, my grandparents or her grandparents' place, or we just sort of juggle it. It's a mess, but it works.
Well, I'm glad to hear it's a mess for you as it is for people like me too. It's not just me dropping all the balls on the ground the whole time. Now, your husband is Trent Miller. He's a cameraman, of course, known to me and many in the industry. But you've mentioned what a good dad he is. But you have been public about the fact that parenthood wasn't easy to come by for you two.
It was a really strange time in our relationship, and it was a really strange time in my life. Everything, I've been really blessed in my lifetime. I have had wonderful jobs. I have had wonderful opportunities. I've had a really loving, gorgeous family. We haven't had, I mean, of course, in families you have your ups and downs, but we haven't been hit by any, touch wood, terrible tragedy in our lives, and everything's comparatively to other people's. My heart breaks for so many of my friends that have had really tough times. Everything's gone pretty smoothly in comparison to other people. Not to say, you know, everything's perfect every day. But then when we got to having a baby, I had in the back of my mind that, yes, I was sort of towards, you know, the later part of, you know, my 30s, and that I might have some trouble. But you go into it with a positive attitude.
Of course.
And you're like, no, it'll be fine. You know, I'm fit and healthy, which I'll get to in a minute, because I know now that that doesn't really mean anything. And, you know, it'll be fine. So my husband travelled a lot for work, as you mentioned. He was a cameraman back then. And, you know, we didn't see each other a lot. He was travelling for work. I was travelling for work. So if not to get too, you know, into the details, but we were together at the right time a lot of the time, so we knew it would take a while anyway.
Yep.
And it did. It took an awful long time, and I did start to get very worried. I went to IVF after about, they say for my age to go after 6 months, but I didn't go immediately after 6 months, just for the pure fact that we had crazy lives and we worked together all the time. So I thought we'd give it a year. So we did give it a year. Then we went to IVF. The first meeting at IVF is very sobering, because I think you grow up being taught that if it doesn't work, oh, there's always IVF.
Yeah.
You know, it's always a plan B. Well, what I learned very early was IVF was not plan B. It was actually the very last resort. It was really plan Z, not plan B. So there are so many people it doesn't work for. And I don't think enough people are vocal about that, because I really truly believe there's this misconception that if you don't fall pregnant naturally, don't worry about it, you'll fall pregnant via IVF. IVF is wonderful, and it's getting better all the time. But for many people, it doesn't work. And in fact, I was one of those people. IVF did not work for us. I had many failed transfers. To put it really simply, from my age, I was getting towards 40 then, I just didn't have enough good eggs because of my age. And I mentioned before, it was about health and fitness. I remember the IVF doctor saying to me, looking at me in the eye and saying, it doesn't matter how fit and healthy you are, the age of your eggs is the age of your eggs.
Yeah.
One, you don't have many eggs left because of your age, and two, they're not of very good quality because of your age. So I think I got in the car that day and cried. After many failed attempts, it was my birthday, and my husband said, you know what, we need to get away. We're really just coping here.
Yep.
And this was actually the time that I was on the footy show, so I was under plenty of pressure in my professional life. And plenty of scrutiny, but this was also happening in my private life. My husband said, I'm going to take you away. It was actually my 40th birthday. So he took me to the very exclusive, beautiful resort named Qualia, which I had never been to before,
to go there.
Sundays. So we went to Qualia, and we just said, you know what, I think we're just going to have to get a dog. This is not going to work for us. So I had martinis, I had prawns, I had oysters, I had everything that I had not been having for, you know, a year and a half. I hadn't been drinking coffee. I did all of this stuff.
Wow.
I was drinking bone broth. I was having acupuncture. I was doing meditation. I was having IVF at the same time. You name it, I was doing it. I think I'd even bought a crystal, for goodness sake. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you just do everything. So we went to Qualia, and once again, not to get too specific, I can tell you we actually got pregnant at Qualia, probably on my birthday.
Well, that, what a gift, first of all. And, you know, there's a tourism line for Qualia too. It all happens at Qualia, the place of dreams.
I mean, Qualia is a very expensive resort, but it's really cheap compared to IVF. So maybe give Qualia a go first.
That is just a beautiful story. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. And more with journalist and TV presenter and lady with the good hair, Rebecca Madden, in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
It's a real honour to be number one asked and considered and to be working alongside some of these guys. It's terrific. I mean, most of the panel have had absolutely brilliant football careers and equally great media careers. So it's going to be a really fun ride, I can guarantee you that. I had a really great chat with Sam yesterday and he said to me, you know what, Rebecca, this is not a gender thing. You are the best man for the job.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Rebecca Madden, journalist and one of the most versatile TV presenters in the country. You just heard her on The Footy Show, which we know she took by the horns when it came back. And, Beck, that must have been a nerve-wracking time. You did such an incredible job, but you can't deny you would have been nervous.
Oh, I don't think nerve. I get anxious now thinking about it, to be honest. I can go back and relive that first night of walking out on that stage in front of the live studio audience of 400 people, all things that I have never done before in my career. And I can take myself back to that moment and I'm sort of, my heart's beating and I'm getting sweaty thinking about it, because I tell you what, I remember the feeling, but I don't remember the show. I don't know what we talked about. I don't know who were the guests. I don't know if I was speaking English or Japanese. I don't remember anything about it. My husband always says to me, why don't you watch that first night back? I'm like, no way. I will never, ever, ever watch it back.
Yeah, I can imagine. And just sitting on that panel, which, you know, has always been those iconic male sports personalities, and you're sitting in the middle of it. That in itself, aside from the audience, aside from the newness of the job, very intimidating.
So intimidating. So intimidating. And, you know, I had grown, got to remember, I had grown up actually watching these people on TV and then, say, someone like Sam Newman, and then to be sitting beside him on the set of The Footy Show. I mean, it was a dream and a nightmare all rolled into one. And, yes, it has been one of, if not the most controversial television shows in the history of Australian television. And then I said yes to being the co-host of it. I mean, I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah. I said yes to the job. I loved it. Every second about it, did it test me? Absolutely beyond words did it test me. I had never been put in that position before. I had never had the focus on me before. I mean, I'd been a reporter and a newsreader, but they're almost, not that you're playing a part, but you're not being
off the cuff like
the real,
you are on The Footy Show.
You're not a personality on the news, or you're not a personality being a journalist. And then I had to become a personality, and I didn't know, sounds weird, but I didn't know how to do that. I learned on the job. I mean, all of these feelings that I had going into it, I probably shouldn't have had, because the cast and crew could not have been more welcoming, warm, understanding, helpful. This is on the first night, not for the rest of the year, but but they were absolutely glorious to work with. I mean, James Brayshaw backstage held my hand. He said, you'll be fine. I'll be here. I will never let you get yourself into trouble. Can't say the same for Sam, but we're all here. We're all supporting you. We love that you're here, and just go and be you.
Yeah. And you did be you, and you were wonderful. And I was very envious of shows like the Grand Final Footy Shows, where you get to let your hair down and, you know, belt out a few songs. Was that just so much fun?
Yes, but I have never been a dancer. And then the grand final footy show is always the highlight is the player review. And the first year we had this ongoing joke throughout the year that they asked me, I think, on one show throughout the year, what was your first concert you went to? And I said, oh, I think my first concert I went to as a teenager was Salt and Pepper. I went to Rod Laver Arena and I stood on my seat with one of my best girlfriends at the time, Martine, and we love Salt and Pepper. And they said, and that is precisely the dance you will be doing in the grand final footy review. And I'm like, no. So I did that the first year. I know. And then the second year, what did I do the second year?
Was it Beyonce involved?
Yes, I did Beyonce, and that when I was 12 weeks pregnant, sick as a dog, wanting to vomit over the front row of the audience at Rod Laver Arena. I was so sick, I didn't think I could do it, but I did it.
That's incredible. Speaking of the footy show and you growing up with it, I know you spent a lot of time in Geelong as a kid. Is that where you started out as a baby?
Yeah, born and bred in Geelong, big Geelong family. All of my child was there, went to school there, and then I left Geelong when I was 18 to go to Melbourne to go up to the big smoke for university.
And you started out an only child, didn't you? And then your mum remarried and you got yourself some brothers.
Well, sort of. No, not really. Well, I actually... flip that on its head a little bit. I actually sort of grew up in my teenage years as an only child because all of my brothers were actually a lot older than me. So I have three stepbrothers that are a lot older, and then my two brothers are 8 and 10 years older than me. So by the time I got to be, you know, sort of 10, they had moved out of home, actually. So my teenage years were pretty much an only child, but I did have five brothers, three stepbrothers and two brothers.
That's a lot of brothers.
It is, isn't it?
And you lived on a farm just out of Geelong. Could you call yourself a farm girl or are you a city girl?
No, probably a farm girl at heart. We didn't have a big farm. It was 45 acres. We had a few sheep, but we had racehorses. My stepfather, just as a sort of a hobby, semi-serious, had his training license. So he used to train racehorses. So we had a racetrack at the very front of our property. We had lots of racehorses there, and my family's still sort of involved in racing today. So that's been very much part of my childhood as well. And the offshoot of that is I grew up riding horses. I competed. I had ponies who were far more, you know, problematic than the expensive racehorses, naughty little ponies they were. And that was my childhood. It was outdoors, was getting up very early in the morning, mucking out horses' stables, feeding, putting them out in the paddock and riding horses.
Sounds idyllic. Your stepdad is a hard worker. Would you say you got your hardworking ethic from him? Was he a bit of a role model for you?
Very much so. He's a self-made man. He's a very successful businessman in Geelong. And he didn't ever say it, but I think you just learn by having that around you. I was lucky that I grew up on a farm that I loved my hobby with all of my heart, and it was a hobby that took up every single waking moment apart from my schooling. But to succeed when you've got a hobby such as horse riding and if you're competing, it's hard work. It doesn't just come by you. You know, your horse needs to be exercised every day, and if you're not exercising your horse every day, you aren't going to win any ribbons. So I learnt very early on that if you want to achieve something, you have to work hard at it. It doesn't just come back. It doesn't just come to people who sit back and wait for it to happen. You have to work. You have to put in the hard work. And even just looking at him, he's a self-made man, had, you know, always tells the stories of how he had dripping on bread of a Sunday night because they barely had any money. You know, he went to the bank, he asked for a loan, he set up a car dealership, and now he has many in Geelong and he's very successful. And I learned very early that that sometimes there are a lot of sacrifices and you miss out on things, you miss out on family gatherings, you can't have everything all at once. You've got to put in the hard work.
Yeah. Were you a good student, passionate? I know you went to an all-girls school. Were you passionate at school and was journalism on the cards early?
No, I was a good student. I must admit I had a very I went to a very small school, which sadly closed down just in my year 11. So I had to transfer schools, which wasn't ideal going into year 12. I went to a very small girls' school in Geelong called Morongo. It was a terrific school. It really fostered independence. And I had a great group of friends, I think, in hindsight, that really pushed each other. I wasn't the smartest in the group by any stretch of the imagination, but we were a hardworking group. We had fun, but we were a hardworking group, and I think that really helped. So I benefited from that immensely. In terms of, you know, the rest of my education, no, I wanted to be a mounted policewoman because my idea was to ride horses for the rest of my life. So I thought, how can I earn money and ride horses? Well, it won't be competing, winning blue ribbons, because that doesn't pay anything. So I thought, yeah, I'll be my girlfriend and I, who I used to ride horses with a lot, thought being a mounted policewoman was very cool. And then I looked into it and I thought, oh, you actually have to go to riots. No, I don't think that's going to be for me. So I scrubbed that idea. I always knew I wanted to
be. And then you ended up at riots anyway.
Yes, exactly, just on the ground, not on a horse. So I always had the idea that I wanted to do following on. Then I wanted to be a vet because, of course, again, grew up on a farm. But I was so bad at maths and science that there was no hope in hell I was ever going to be a vet. Could never pass those subjects. So I always wanted to do something in the media. It always sort of fascinated me, but I had no one I knew was in the media. No one, no family members. I didn't really know anyone. So that was always going to be a struggle. But I did a year of arts at Melbourne because I didn't know what else to do. And I sort of leaned on the journalism subjects, and then I transferred to RMIT to focus on it more.
And you haven't looked back. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. And more with the one and only Beck Madden when we return.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Tobin Brothers now offer fully live streamed services so that anyone who cannot attend the funeral of a loved one at the moment in these challenging times can still view the service and participate. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Tonight we are with Beck Madden, a TV presenter, the host of Australian Ninja Warrior, and someone who, of course, cut her teeth in the TV industry as a young reporter. And back in those early days, Beck, you were thrown in the deep end, I guess, as a young reporter in October 2002. You joined Channel 7 after being offered a reporting position by the news director then. And it was in that first year that you won a Quill Award. That's pretty amazing to win a Quill in your first year of TV. And that was for the bushfires in 2003. It's scary covering a bushfire, isn't it?
Yeah, you know all too well, Laura, and particularly when you've never done it before. I was only really young. I think I was 23 when I joined Channel 7. I'd only had a couple of months. As you said, I joined in October, and the bushfires sort of started around Christmas time, and they were really long-running bushfires. So it was Australia Day, and I was sent to Omeo. In fact, I was sent to Omeo with my cameraman, Will, who was also pretty young, who's one of the best at Channel 7 now. Yeah. He was also pretty young, Will Pristol, and we went off to Omeo. Nothing much happened for a couple of days. And I was just I wasn't sent to cover the big story. All the other reporters were on the big story where it was actually happening. I was just like, send a junior reporter to sit there to wait to see, you know, if she can cover off anything. We sat there for a few days, had a few nice meals at the pub, got to speak to the locals, and then all of a sudden too dramatic, but it was. All of a sudden we woke up one morning and the sky was black. It was 9 o'clock in the morning, completely pitch black, couldn't see a thing. Will and I looked at each other. We said, what is going on? We had never been in this situation before. We both looked at each other and said, I have no idea what's going on. We went to the local fire station. They said, we're surrounded by the fire on three fronts, and we suggest that you get to the football oval with the rest of the community and take shelter there, because that's your only option at this point. We can't get you in or out. Nobody's leaving. There weren't many people in the town at that stage because the fires had been around, as I said, for a number of weeks. So the elderly and the vulnerable had been moved out of town. So there weren't a lot of people, but that we had one fire truck in the middle of the football oval full of water. And I said to the captain, is that going to be enough water to protect us if the fire comes through? And he said, oh, it should be. I said, I don't really want to hear the word should be at this point. I mean, yeah. And then I'm thinking, okay, I'm here, but I'm also going to have to file a story. How on earth do I do this? I don't know what's happening, where it's happening, or what I should be doing.
But what did you do? What was the story that won? I mean, there's bushfire stories and there's bushfire stories. What won you the quill?
So we couldn't get any... We basically were just trapped at the football oval. So in terms of vision, we didn't really have a lot, so to speak, of the actual fire that we've seen in recent years. We didn't have any actual flames coming towards us. It was just far too dangerous, too dangerous to go anywhere. And because the fires have been going for so long, no choppers could get any aerial vision or anything because it was full of smoke, way too dangerous for the choppers to fly. So we phoned in a story that night to the news. I was just on the telephone talking. No, there was no video conferencing. Like, that wasn't heard of way back then. Yeah. This is in the older years.
The older
way
days.
Back when I was, you know, in my 20s. Lucky we had mobile phones working, honestly. So we filed a story. I was just live talking on the phone that night, and then we did lots of gathering the next day. So it was almost the story that actually won me the quill was almost 24 hours squeezed into about, I think it was about a 6-minute story that ran on the news the following night. And we actually couldn't even get the tapes as we had. They have, you know, other things these days, but we had actual tapes back then. We had to finally drive to another destination to get the Channel 7 helicopter to meet us, to physically give over the tapes so the vision could be sent back to work and edited together.
Amazing. Back in the days when the choppers would fly tapes around. did you, it must have been a shock to the system, your young reporter, probably one of the, you know, first in the first few months of you being reporter to be in that scenario where, you know, your life's at risk. Frightening for a young woman.
Yeah, really frightening. It was on Australia Day, I remember, and I rang my then boyfriend and he wasn't answering the phone. No. I was like, oh, my goodness, why aren't you answering the phone? I rang my parents. I said, look, I'm okay. I'm here. You might hear something sort of scary on the news tonight because we are here at Omeo, but I'm okay. Everything's going to be okay. But deep down and with hindsight, there's every chance that maybe I wasn't going to be okay. We hear about tragedy in bushfires in this country every single summer. And just because I was a reporter doesn't mean I have special powers. I'm not immune to a bushfire. If a bushfire wanted to go through the guts of Omeo, had it done in history and you know, decades before, it well could have done that. We were very, very lucky that at the very last minute, and I'm talking within, you know, an hour, half an hour, we had a wind change and the fire pushed back on itself and away from that football oval.
It's all it takes, isn't it, a wind change to make or break a situation like that. Are there other stories, news stories that you've covered, Beck, in your time that stick with you like that one?
Yes. Joe Corp, his wife, Maria Corp. Do you remember the Corps?
Yeah. We interviewed a detective on this show that was the lead detective on that case. It's just a horrific story.
Yeah, horrific. And I had gotten in with his brother. So I was very close to this story for months. And in fact, the very day, so Maria, just to backtrack, Maria Corp had gone missing. So feared dead. Her body was found in the boot of her car. That's correct. At the shrine of, just outside the Shrine of Remembrance. On that very day, I was inside their house, Maria and Joe Corp's house, doing a one-on-one exclusive interview with Joe Corp. And the most difficult question, I think, for a journalist to ever ask, and the most difficult question I've ever asked another human being, is when you're sitting a metre and a half away from somebody and the camera's rolling and it's just you and your cameraman inside a stranger's house, and I asked him, did you kill your wife? I don't know how I got the courage to ask that question because you, well, what happens if he said yes? I mean, I thought he would say no. But what happened if he said yes? I didn't know what he was going to say. He was a crazy person. And I had conducted the interview. I was quite scared throughout the entire interview. We got in the car, thankfully, drove away with my cameraman, Damien, I remember. It was Damo.
Damo.
And we got a call. We were almost back to work. And I got a call from the chief of staff. It was Sally on that day, and Sally said, they have found Maria. She's in the boot of her car and she is alive.
Incredible.
And she said, did you get the interview? And I said, yes, I did. She goes, okay, get back to work. We need to file this story as quickly as possible.
Absolutely. That was an absolutely a huge story, and one that sticks with a lot of people in Melbourne and Australia. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. And more with Beck Madden up next.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funeral, celebrating lives. Tobin Brothers now offer fully live streamed services so that anyone who cannot attend the funeral of a loved one can still view the service and participate. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. Our guest tonight is the multi-talented Rebecca Madden, journalist and one of the most versatile TV presenters in the country. Along with her many media roles, Beck is in our screens, is on our screens at the moment. On Weekend Today, of course, as co-host of Australian Ninja Warrior on Channel 9. Well, we can't say that you're not busy, Beck. As a sports broadcaster, though, what a weird time to be hosting shows about sport with COVID, you know, wiping out crowds.
I know, it's bizarre. And my greatest fear, and because I absolutely love it, and I've done it for the last 2 years, is the Australian Open, Tennis Open in January, hopefully, fingers crossed, next year. You know, I read that the Ash Barty has pulled out of the US Open. The US Open at this stage, unbelievably, is still going ahead. But I am really worried about what the Australian Open is going to look like next year, because that's something that I absolutely just cherish, sitting in that chair and hosting that tournament, because I think it's one of the best sporting tournaments in the entire world. I love it. And I'm concerned about how it's going to look.
Yeah. Speaking of things you cherish, if anyone knows a little bit about Beck Madden, it is her love of the Geelong Cats. It's so sad to see that, you know, even the footy crowds have had to be removed at this time. They're still going strong, though.
I can't believe that every weekend at the moment is me not going to the football. I can't remember a winter. Like, I don't know what to do with myself. It's a bizarre way to live, because I live for the weekends when the Geelong Cats are playing. Now, that may sound ridiculous too if you're not a football fan, but to football fans, that's how we survive the cold, miserable winter in Melbourne. We
look forward to our
football team bringing us joy on the weekends. You know, I wouldn't want to be a footballer at the moment. My heart goes out to them. It must be such a surreal feeling to be just getting through, jamming games in. What's a grand final going to look like? There are so many unknowns. Will the season actually be finished? It must be a very bizarre period for them as well.
Do you know what I've been thinking, Beck? For whoever wins this grand final this year, presuming there will be one, I feel sorry for them, because I feel like we're forever going to say, oh, well, yeah, but that was the year COVID was on. So it might sort of take something away from the win, because it hasn't been the competition it normally is.
I think the complete opposite, Laura. I think the team, hopefully it's Geelong. I'll say this. If it's Geelong, I'm going to say this. If it's not Geelong, I'll say exactly what you just said. if it's Geelong and we win, I'm going to say that's the greatest triumph ever because through so much adversity, so many changes. I mean, they don't even know who they're playing the next week. They can't prepare for this. They're playing two games a week. It's never been done before. There's
but
injuries.
They've shortened the games.
Lack of preparation. Come on, Laura. Come on. Remember Geelong are winning this year. It'll be the greatest triumph ever because it's been one of the hardest.
Yeah, it has. It has been the hardest, and it must be very difficult to play without a crowd, and especially a home crowd, although there's little recordings of the cheering and that sort of thing, but to not have that visual support would be a huge blow, given that that's something they're so used to.
Well, these guys are performers, remember? These guys love performing on the biggest stage. That's why we always see, you know, the greatest football in, you know, the prelim finals or the semi-finals or the grand final, because it's the ultimate way they can perform and show their talent. So, you know, I don't know how they're doing it playing, you know, there's a few people in the crowd now, and we've seen actually the standard of football lift. As soon as we had people in the crowds, the standard of footy's lifted.
Yeah. It must be different for you too. I know you said you love to spend winter watching the footy every weekend, but I know you host a lot of events for Geelong Footy Club. You're an MC a lot. You're part of the sort of lifeblood down there. To not even physically be there and be talking to, you know, those in the back rooms, it's a bit sad.
Yeah, I'm really missing it. It's a really, really big part of my life. I've been number one ticket holder at the Geelong Cats now for a decade, and part of my role is, yes, to host the big functions, do interviews. I'm very active on game day. Not active compared myself to the players, but I do
with your footy boots on and
I do play an active role in the goings on behind, you know, off the field in terms of you know, what happens on game day, because there's a hell of a lot that actually happens on game day that people don't realize behind the scenes. You know, there's lots of corporates, you know, there's a lot to do, and I also miss the team that is the Geelong Football Club, not so much the players, the behind the scenes. There's it's a terrific network of people, and they've had to let so many people go. As with every football club, hundreds of people have lost their jobs or been stood down at the moment. So I'm missing that big team as well.
Yeah, it is extraordinary times. We can only hope we'll be back to normal next year, and that you'll have your Australian Open as well. Beck, thank you for being with us tonight. It has been so much fun.
Oh, pleasure. I hope I haven't bored everybody. Apologies in advance.
You've been a lot of fun. Thank you for being with us. And if you've enjoyed our chat with Rebecca Madden and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. This has been Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And, of course, join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.